corn, I guess.
While we're trying the podcast.
I'm just going to do that later.
It is April Fool's. I did the For the Love of Porn on April Fool's a couple years ago.
That's right. I wasn't even thinking about that.
I remember that. Because I told Grayson, he's like, he didn't understand what I was talking about. I'm like, I'll do it by myself, and I think it'll be funny. Just as long as I get these people that compose porn music not angry with me. But I did start real serious. I'm like, porn's important.
It is. Cinema, I think we all need porn in our lives.
This thing, it's stupid, but I think it would be funny if we did fake sponsors, and I would love to be like, this has been brought to you by porn. If you're feeling lonely, porn. Something stupid like that. Until we get real sponsors. And people are like, these guys are the shit. They are sponsored by porn in general. We have the couch.
Yeah.
I do kind of take pictures of, or do like some video of Chuck sitting on the couch, and we're like, so you need money, huh? Have you modeled before? And then he'll just be like, I thought about it.
Can
you take off your shirt?
Is that part of this?
Can this just be our opening? Is like that?
Well, we do have to have the picture of the couch. I don't know. I think when we make the transition to video, we will have to use that couch.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, honestly, it used to be there because this used to be a guest room, so it's a pull-out.
Yeah.
And then we don't pull it out. You don't pull it. No. Are you recording this?
Yeah, the whole thing's
recording. Okay. Well,
it doesn't make any sense to anybody.
This
I'm
should
sure.
be our opening.
If you want it to be our opening, it can be our opening.
I'm fine with that. I guess we should, for people who just tuned in, we should introduce ourselves.
Oh, people have been listening for about a minute and a half already.
Well, if you're still with us, we're Cinema D'Amore. I'm James Reinhardt.
I'm Justin Morgan.
Chuck Phillips.
And the couch we're referring to is we have upgraded. We have a new space. And at my house, I created a special podcasting space in my guest room. And we moved our pull-out couch to a corner here. And as soon as Justin walked in, he's like, you got a porn couch.
And here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. Here we are. I'm all excited. I'm all happy. I'm like, yeah, we got our own private room. We could podcast. No dogs, no distraction, no noises, and then, porn couch.
Yeah. And then Alexi kept trying to, talk to you, so you, pushed her out of the room and locked it?
No, the door's...
As exaggerating.
Yeah, you was a bit exaggerating.
But it was good imagery, right? Like, everybody totally imagined James, slowly pushing her as she's like, James, I love you. And he's like, get.
Alexi loves that we have this podcasting era, because she, in the very next room, can watch TV without... without being disturbed. Whereas before we'd be like, hey, can you go anywhere else for an hour or two and be quiet?
Could you put your Beats headset on and just generally be yourself? We are in a new theme though. It's nice. We're not talking about Tarantino. Which I think's nice.
Yeah.
It is nice. We got it. It's some
break
variety.
It up a little bit.
But our theme is it was my theme that I picked. It was childhood terror, aka movies that scared you as a child, and it's my pick today. And I picked A Return to Oz from sometime in the 80s. I forget the year.
1985.
Yep. I thought it was 85, but I didn't want to come out and say it.
Walter Murch.
Yeah, so directed by Walter Murch, who was an editor, worked with Coppola and Spielberg, and he worked with all of them. He was friends with all of them. And this was he's still working today as an editor, but this was his first and only time behind the camera directing. And
that was one thing I read, that Spielberg and Coppola were the ones that basically kept him from, I guess he was fired from this movie because they hated what he was doing. And then Spielberg and Coppola were like, no, he's a good guy. And they were like, all right, we'll let him finish the movie.
Yeah. And I heard, I guess, cause Disney's worried about him falling behind schedule, and George Lucas said oh, if he does, I'll finish the movie for you. And, but yeah, Disney was not happy with what they saw with what he was doing with this movie. They didn't really promote it that well, because of that. So it kind of flopped. But, I, when I saw it, obviously, per the theme, this movie fucking terrified me when I saw it as a kid. All throughout my childhood, my mom was like, yeah, there's another Wizard of Oz movie. My brothers and I were so excited that, there's a second Wizard of Oz movie. And then I watched it, and there's a witch that could take off her head and put on other heads and shit like that, and fucking terrified me. And I feel like that's why Disney was not very happy with this. But watching it now as an adult, as a kid, you know, there's a long time when I didn't watch it. I rewatched it a few months ago as an adult. Expected to be horrible, but I kind of liked it. And I rewatched again for this, and I still kind of liked it. But it definitely is a horror film in my eyes. I feel like he made a horror film.
It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's definitely not anything like the original Wizard of Oz at all. So it's a very odd choice to...
Well, I think they had a lot of copyright issues.
No, the only copyright issue is they couldn't use the ruby slippers.
They had to pay for it.
They had to pay just to use the ruby slippers, which at that point, I don't know why they didn't just remake The Wizard of Oz, because they said...
I would rather have this than them remake it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's hard to do, like, they set this up as a sequel to MGM's movie, basically, I guess. But they don't use any of their designs, they don't use anything from
it. This is, like, exactly probably what the Dr. Sleep movie will be, because it's supposed to be accurate to the book.
So it just has no continuity with The Shining.
I'm sure the hotel will be the same or something, but they're going to... it's going to not tie in that well.
Yeah, and I feel like, once again, that was one of the choices Walter Murch made, where he didn't want this to be a sequel to the MGM movie. He wanted this to be a sequel to the book. And all the character designs are from the book. The story itself is a combination of like two or three of the Oz books, because there's an entire series of Oz books. There's not just one. I read a bunch of them as a child. I honestly couldn't recall much of that. But yeah, like character, like all the new characters brought in are characters from the books. Character of Ozma, Mombi's a little different. The Gnome King's in it. But yeah, so he wanted this to be more in line with the books. And once again, Disney didn't like that because they wanted something like the beloved MGM film. I'm in the minority where like the MGM film is seen as like, you know, this kind of this pillar of cinema that like is untouchable. I'm in the minority where I think I would like to see a remake of Wizard of Oz that's more close to the books, but most people seem to just want to leave it like as is, you know.
I'm sure if Disney has it, it'll be done.
Yeah, they tried again a few years ago if Oz the Great and Powerful, but that was definitely...
Well, that's its own thing though, kind of.
It's its own thing, but it still definitely is more in line if I think the original than this.
Chuck always said that there's a part in that movie with James Franco that reminds him of me.
I can't remember
it. It's when he flies away in the balloon. He plays Oz. He flies away in the balloon, and he's like, he's too young to die. He hasn't accomplished anything in his life yet. He said that's something I would totally say. Yeah.
I did like Oz the Great and Powerful, but if you watch it knowing that Sam Raimi's behind it, it is essentially Army of Darkness, but for children. Like, at one point, the plot becomes exactly Army of Darkness. And, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this is, like, a family-friendly Army of Darkness, so I'm in.
That's okay. I saw Dumbo over the weekend, and it was a combination of Batman Returns and, what was that, Pee-wee's...
Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Big Top?
Big Top Pee-wee? Big Top Pee-wee, yeah. It was like those two came together and became Dumbo. So, I feel like these directors get maybe... I don't know if they really have a say in it. Like, they get in, Sam Raimi's ready to direct, he reads the script, he goes, oh, Army of Darkness, okay. I see why I'm here. Isn't that his last movie?
It was, yeah. I was going to say, he hasn't directed a movie since.
What was that, like 2011 or something? That was a while ago.
It has to have been a while.
Yeah, like almost.
He was supposed to do a Warcraft movie, worked on it for two years or something, and then it fell through. They still made a Warcraft movie.
Yeah, with Duncan Jones. And I know he was on the short list to direct The Flash for WB, but they end up going with the guys that did Game Night. But yeah, Sam Raimi hasn't made a... He did direct the pilot episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead.
I knew you were going to say that, because I was going to say that. Well, so I knew we were going to say wavelength there.
Yeah. Great minds. But yeah, I think that's the last thing he directed. He directed the pilot episode of that.
I wonder what he's doing, just living life.
Maybe.
I think he still produces stuff.
He had that Ghost House, but I can't think of the last movie that came out that was a Ghost House movie. That's a production company. Mm-hmm. Chuck's going to look up and see what the hell he's been
up to.
Yeah,
I was going to say, because I don't
see what he's been doing.
Because, yeah, I was thinking that. I'm like, man, he hasn't...
He's like John Carpenter. He's just doing music. You're like, I didn't even know. Some weird hobby.
The one thing I liked about... I wasn't a huge fan of his version, Oz the Great and Powerful. But the, one of the things I really did like was how he tried to maintain the, how it starts out in like full screen. It starts out like an old timey movie. And then when he goes there, this is one thing I kind of like that he kept there.
Yeah. I mean, like
that
I said,
that was 2013. That was the last thing he directed.
And that would make sense. Cause Warcraft, I think, was 16. So that was like his three wasted years of nothing happening.
He's produced, all he's done is producing the Evil Dead remake, Poltergeist remake. He produced Don't Breathe. He's producing the new Grudge movie that's coming out. But not much.
That's weird.
Yeah, I miss him. I mean, that's the only reason, that's the main reason I saw Oz.
He's trying to do a Simple Plan 2, but they don't want
they won't let him do it.
It's called A Simple Plan 2, More Money. They find a second suitcase.
I mean, I feel like it's one of those cases where we're going to find out years later that, like, he just got tired of working, like, with the studio system and just gave up. Because, like, Spider-Man 3, you know, we know he had trouble with the studio. And then, you know, then obviously Warcraft, see if he spent years working on it and nothing happened. I feel like it might be one of those cases where maybe he's just, like, sick and is like, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, produce. And
there's so many directors that talk about how they've made movies that make tons of money and then they can't even make the next project they want. Mm. It just gets turned down. They're like, you're not to toot my own horn, but I'm the guy that made this. So I don't know. We'll see. With Return of the Oz, I remember seeing this as a kid and being very confused what the hell this had to do with the Wizard of Oz. Because I don't really remember much of, I remember Emerald City and after, I don't really remember much of the her gonna get electroshock therapy or whatever the hell's happening. But I do remember her looking for Scarecrow, and she's getting chased by wheel monsters. And I'm like, what the fuck are those guys? And when what was it? Jack Pumpkinhead.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's cool.
Yeah.
I don't really know where everybody else is. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing everybody was turned into stone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was terrifying.
Yeah.
And then later in a movie, people step in the desert and they turn into, like, sand. I'm like, well, fuck, I would be dead if I was in this place.
That's what I mean. Like, this is a horror film. She, you know, it starts off, Dorothy is obviously experiencing some sort of PTSD from going to Oz, because they talk about how she, like, doesn't sleep. You know, and she always keeps talking about Oz, and Aunt Em and Uncle Henry take her to an asylum to get electroshock therapy. And a throwaway line that I also love is, like, there the whole time she's in the asylum, like, you hear these screaming, and then when she's rescued by who we find out later is Ozma, and she's like, oh, what's that screaming? And she's like, oh, those are, like, the patients that, like, it didn't work out, and they keep them locked in the basement. Like, what the fuck? Like, how did I not catch that last time?
For the most part, it's a really good looking set. It's nice to see that everything's practical, besides their, like, stop motion claymation effects or whatever they do, which are fine. But I like all the scenes with the talking chicken. Who? What's her name? Belina.
Belina.
Belina, voiced by a man.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was like, that was Disney in the 80s. A role that could totally go to a woman, you know?
Voiced by a dude. Yeah, and Brian Henson voices Jack Pumpkinhead, whom I feel like Tim Burton should owe Disney money. Because after seeing that character, I'm like, yeah, he definitely got the idea for Jack Skellington.
Jack Skellington came after this, and I think Pumpkinhead came after this.
Yeah, so they both owe Disney money for this, but...
His name is Jack Pumpkinhead. He literally was split into a family fun property and a terrifying property.
Then we have the weird moose head, the Gump, that they're just like, we'll just strap it to a bunch of furniture and pour this dust all over it and bring it to life. And it's just like, I hate my life. I wish I was not a thing so depressing. He's just like, I wish I was still hanging on the wall.
His body's like dead. A goddamn couch.
Mm-hmm.
He does have a funny line about being his pun where he should have stopped while he was ahead.
Once again, like, even his backstory is so fucking, like, terrifying.
What happened? He's like, I was walking around in the forest, then I heard a loud bang, then I was on a wall.
His, like, even now, his, like, where he is now is even really depressing because there's like a thrift store in LA that sells old movie costumes. By movie costumes, I mean, like, shit they obviously bought for, like, extras. and didn't know what to do with, so he gave it to the store and sells them. But they have old props, like, posted throughout, like, hanging in the store, including him. Like, the Gump is mounted on the wall in this, like, thrift store in L.A. And I was like, oh, it's a guy from Return to Oz. So that's where he is now.
I also really like the character of TikTok because he doesn't seem like he would be a very good soldier. Like, I don't know if Dorothy just sucked at winding him up because she only gave him, like, three wines when she could have went all the way or something. But his body type, I mean, I don't want to be talking about body type, but for he's TikTok, fat. Yeah, he doesn't seem to be very mobile or would be a good warrior.
Seems like he falls over very easily.
I wondered that, too, because, yeah, he's supposed to be the Army of Oz. And I feel, because at first when they find him, he's like this wind-up man. And it says, like, the Royal Army of Oz. I'm like, oh, he's part of the army, but they keep referring to him as the army, as if he's the only one they have. But, yeah, he has to be, he keeps winding down, and he doesn't really move very fast. And
he does spin around and whip the hell out of everybody, though.
I was going to say, yeah, he him with that lunch pail, he kicks the shit out of the Wheelers, who are terrifying also.
The Wheelers were, like, super creepy. They might have overused a few shots to make them less creepy. I like how there's a scene where Dorothy gets cut off. Of course, she goes to the one place where the key that she found will work. And the Wheelers are out there talking through the keyhole. And they're like, you have to come out eventually. I was like, how do they even know what's in there? How did they not know that that leads, like, out of the city or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot, because, like, she goes in there and it happens to be TikTok, who is put in there by Scarecrow to wait for Dorothy. So, like, how would they know? But, yeah, I mean,
Scarecrow's pretty terrifying, too.
Just a weird, yeah, his mouth doesn't move at all. He, like, looks, it's just a weird mask.
He looks like the terrifying Easter bunnies. Like, he just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, once again, I was reading, I guess he was supposed to have, like, a fully, like, automated mask. But, they're like Disney kept slashing the budget, so they could only get like a mask. They had a couple different masks with a couple different expressions, and that was what they had to use. But Scarecrow, Tin Man, and the Cowardly Lion were supposed to have bigger roles in this, but once again, because of budget cuts, they couldn't use them.
They just left them stone.
Yeah, so they're all essentially cameos. And like I said, their designs are what they look like in the illustrations for the book, especially like, you know, Tin Man, that's what he looks like pretty much. But yeah, they're essentially cameos at the end. Scarecrow gets a few lines.
I have a nice book from, like, I found it at a antique store from 1963. One side's The Jungle Book, one side's Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
I have books just like that. I don't have that one, but, like, one side's, like, Arabian Nights and the other side's, like, Grimm's Fairy Tales.
It says Companion Library, so maybe it's a stolen. Maybe it's a stolen library book. I have no idea.
I might have got a library book sale or something.
But yeah, all the character designs looked identical to what you see. But I also like that this Dorothy is the woman from American History X and Craft, because she looked familiar to me, and I was like,
as soon as I saw her name, I was like, well, should I look it up? And I was like, never seen anybody else with that name before.
Yeah, Fairuza Balk. This was her her first movie.
We also did another movie with the gentleman that plays the Gnome King.
Yeah, Nicole Williamson. He was Merlin in Excalibur.
Yeah. I thought he looked familiar, but I didn't look up like the whole cast. I only looked up the main people, like Piper Laurie and Fairuza Balk.
Yeah, and she looks, I don't remember her from anything when she's younger, so she kind of threw me off a little bit. She doesn't have, like, the look that I'm familiar with.
I knew, I definitely know that person from somewhere, and then, like, the credits came up, and I was like, oh, okay.
Not who I would have guessed that was.
I wasn't sure, but.
Like, even when we watched Excalibur and it had Helen Mirren in it, it looks like Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
This doesn't. It could be a different person.
I guess for me, because, yeah, like, I grew up watching this, and then, like, Fairuza Balk, she was a child actress and a bunch of stuff that my brother would watch. So, like, I kind of, like, saw her career. Because she was in this. She was in The Worst Witch, which is, like, a children's thing made in the 80s that she was in. And my brother loved that, too. I think I've seen her in a couple other things. So it was, like, interesting seeing her, like, grow from child actress to, you know, like, the Craft.
Waterboy.
Waterboy. you know.
She did have, like, a hot streak with, like, a couple years where she was in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she did like Dr. Moreau. I haven't seen her in anything recently, but I know her, like everyone else, while making Dr. Moreau had a terrible experience. It's one of those things where I wonder if maybe she got out of the business.
Maybe she'll be in the Craft remake that they're supposed to be doing.
Maybe. Maybe they'll get her for a cameo or something. But yeah, so it's so yeah, essentially in this, Dorothy ends up she gets out of the asylum during a rainstorm, gets on like a driftwood thing, and then ends up, even though it's supposed to be in Kansas, somehow she ends up crossing an ocean and into Oz, which is essentially a post-apocalyptic Oz, because the Yellow Brick Road's been destroyed, the Emerald City's been destroyed, everyone's been turned to stone.
In that moment when she sees the Yellow Brick Road, I kind of wish she was just like, what the fuck happened to the Yellow Brick Road? I want to know, I think what threw me off too is I remembered the Wizard of Oz, and now she's like, this is my house. And I'm like, well, where the hell's, like, what was it called, Munchkin Land?
Oh, yeah, Munchkin Land, yeah.
Nothing looks like it was that at all.
Yeah, yeah, because I remember being a kid and thinking that too. I'm like, well, where are the Munchkins? And I guess, like, I don't know, like, even like, as you know, we know now, knowing that, you know, budget reasons, they probably couldn't have. But yeah,
they couldn't afford that many dwarves.
Probably, yeah.
Or even the design. I think most of the design.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they'd be half off.
I also really like, too, early in the movie when Uncle Henry's working on the house and he built like half of the house. Like, he didn't build it in like a normal order. It's like almost
definitely a full, halfway done.
Yeah, it's definitely like a full house on the one side. And then
just frame.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, but I felt like most of the budget, besides characters, went into that witch's, Mumbai's house.
Oh, yeah.
And probably, I guess, Emerald City. Because it's even weird at the end when they're having their, like, parade, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to call it a parade, I don't know what the hell. And it just looked like whoever the hell was around, they're like, you're here. You're on the set.
Yeah. Yeah, like Mombi, like I don't know, like the sets in this movie are beautiful because like Mombi's castle looks amazing. The end when they're in like the Gnome King's like collection room, like that to me is a really great set. But I don't know where these, because this was shot in UK, but I don't know where these sets were. But yeah, like Mombi, her entire castle I think looks great. And that entire sequence is great, but also like something, it's like I said, it's something straight out of a fucking horror film.
Even like the river sequence was like, I do like the Ozma character like fell in and she's trying to help her, and then that I guess it's a caretaker, if you want to call her that, the assistant comes down to get her, and Dorothy just like, I'll just jump into this river, dangerous river. And the chicken's there for some reason. I don't know how it got there. I guess it was the thing that she was in was like some sort of hen house.
It was like a chicken coop or something.
So that made sense. But I did like how the chicken was talking to her. The chicken is really what ties the whole movie together.
That's true. Yeah,
it's the heroic chicken, the heroic character. They say that brings everything down.
I really did love, and it's so out of context in the beginning of the movie, where the rocks are spying on them, and then they're going down and talking to some ominous person that you don't know who it is. It
reminds me of like someone talking to Claw from like Inspector Gadget. You just hear the voice in the background. And she has a chicken. What?
He's so calm about it, and then he says that Vasa, she has a chicken, and he just freaks. And I'm like, it didn't even come back into my head that later in the movie the chicken might have something to do with like, I don't know, beating the unbeatable Gnome King.
They keep bringing it up over and over again, and yeah, they never tell you why. It's just
like,
does they still have the chicken? I didn't see it. Great.
But doesn't that sound like, oh, I mean, maybe not so much Oz, maybe more like Wonderland, where it's like they outlawed chickens and it would just be just for no like reason that. They're just outlawed. Yeah.
But the chicken, as we find out at the end, eggs are poisonous to gnomes. And she lays an egg inside the Gnome King and fucking kills him.
I mean, technically, she lays an egg inside Jack Pumpkinhead's head.
Yeah. And I love when it's rolling around in his head. And I love the Gnome King's eyes, like, following it, falling it. Like, he could have maybe blocked it, but...
No, he just frozen in fear. He accepted his death.
He was funny too, where like everyone had to go in and solve his riddle, I guess is what you would consider, I don't know, his puzzle. And Dorothy's like, it's taking them a long time. He's like, I don't know, why don't you go in and help them? That's so creepy.
But then, like, it's so creepy is like, you know, he starts out as like completely rock. He's a completely stop motion character. But then as they go, they each go in this room to solve this puzzle and they each fail and become part of his collection. Like, he becomes more and more human. Like, there's a really good shot of like after someone fails, like he it's all done in one shot. He comes out of like the rock and becomes more humanoid, all done stop motion. And from an effects standpoint, I'm like, it must have taken him fucking forever to do that shot, to do like a rock piece, like coming away from stone and then somewhat morphing into a more human form. And then like, as he progresses, he becomes Nicole Williamson in like really creepy makeup.
That leads to my favorite moment where he brings up the ruby slippers and then he just sticks his foot out and he's like, "Oh, you mean these ruby slippers?
I do like
these. Don't you like these?"
I do like the moment too where Mombai comes and she's like, "There's so many things that remind me of Narnia in this movie. I don't know where the crossover happens from the books, but where she's like sledding and she comes in and he's like, "I think the child's coming this way," and he just has, or she says that to him. And he has this, like, weird smile, and she's like, "You already know." And he's like, "I know everything."
But back to Mombi, like, that scene in her castle where, like, she goes to that hall with all these heads, takes off one head, puts on another head, and then, you know, locks Dorothy in that, like, that room.
She's going to be a head. That's what she's told.
Yeah. She's going to let her, like, wait there and age.
Wait till you age, your head gets more normal sized.
And then she's going to take Dorothy's head, which is fucked up.
A small head would be kind of cool, though.
But then maybe if you had Mombi's.
Be like Super head. Mario Brothers, the Goombas with the real tiny heads.
But then she needs this powder of life to bring the Gump, which is could be their escape vehicle to life. So she finds Jack in this tower. He helps her escape. She has to go to where Mombi's original head is. And, like, you know, she has to go and open up the cabin where the head is and get that powder of life. And, like, as a kid, that scene fucking terrified me where, like...
They all start screaming?
Yeah, but when she's, like, there, like, her head's just there sleeping and Dorothy, like, grabs the powder of life, then Mombi's eyes open and she just goes, like, "Dorothy, girl!" Like, as a kid, I was like, this is the scariest movie I've ever seen.
And then it's, like, Evil Dead 2, that body just, like, shoots
That's what I thought now watching as an adult, because she's running and then, like, the headless body gets up out of bed and starts chasing her. And it looks like in Evil Dead 2, like, when that deadless corpse is dancing. And even now as an adult, I'm like, this is just straight up a horror scene. Like, this is just meant to terrify children.
Well, how did you originally end up watching this movie? I remember being on TV. Is that how you just happened to see it on TV?
Yeah.
And it said something about Oz, so you just assumed there was a sequel to The Wizard of Oz that you've already seen.
It was on the Disney Channel. I remember, like, my mom told me about me and my brother about it. My brother really liked The Wizard of Oz. So, like, we kept saying we wanted to see it, and then, like, it was on one night on Disney Channel, and she taped it. And, I hated it after it fucking terrified me, but he loved it. He watched it all the time. And then, like I said, I revisited it as an adult. But, yeah, like, the Disney Channel, I think I brought this up a little bit last episode, but it used to show, like, not just, like, Disney Channel nowadays seems to be mostly stuff aimed at, like, the preteen and younger crowd, like, all original programming, but... When I remember growing up, the Disney Channel would show a lot of older, like, Disney stuff.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, their old TV shows and stuff like not like the mainstream stuff that you associate with Disney. And it doesn't seem to do that anymore. So I feel like a lot of, because even...
Like all their old Jungle Books and crap that they...
Yeah. Or like, you know, Chuck Robb, like Zorro. Yeah, I used to watch Zorro
all the time. Zorro and the Mickey Mouse Club would play at like 3 o'clock in the morning when no child should be awake and you're like, I'm going to watch this old black and white TV show.
But even like this, I got the DVD from the library. And the DVD has like trailers for like, oh, old Disney classics being re-released on DVD. But they're Disney movies no one has ever fucking heard of. And like to me, I'm like, that stuff's kind of cool. Like that's history of like this was arguably the biggest, most well-known studio in Hollywood.
Swept right under now. The rug, Disney.
Yeah. And like Disney, I always bring up, is really good at that, at like sweeping... Like the stuff it doesn't want to talk about, like under the rug, Like, I have The Rocketeer on DVD, which I really like The Rocketeer, but that was a Disney flop. And The Rocketeer DVD is, like, they literally just transferred the VHS to a DVD. They didn't, like, clean it up or put on any, like, special features or anything. Like, they really kind of ignore anything that's not, like,
there's been a lot of rumors for years about them remaking that.
The Rocketeer. Yeah, yeah. I think they just recently said that they're going to do, like, a cartoon or something. But I'd be all about a Rocketeer
remake. Who is it? Billy Crudup or something? Who's the main... Who's the Rocketeer?
It's not Billy
Crudup. It's the guy from The Killing.
Yeah, in the wheelchair? The mayor?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't think of his name. It's Billy Campbell.
Okay.
But yeah, like, I love... Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I remember that looking really cool. I don't remember much of that movie.
I loved it when I was a kid, and then I found it on DVD at the Exchange, and I bought it. And like I said, the DVD quality is terrible. Like, you could tell they didn't put any effort into it. But it's still like a solid enough movie. Like, it's not great, but it's, you know, it's like a perfectly fine, you know, a very Spielberg. It's like a Spielberg Lucas mashup film.
I mean, it might be Joe Johnston's best movie.
So you would definitely say too that Joe Johnston, the Wolfman remake, Walter Murch edited that.
Yeah, there we go. There's a connection.
There you go. It's all tied together. Mm-hmm. Would you... Now, Chuck, I know that you haven't seen this movie before.
Yeah.
Is it because it was just too fucking obscure?
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't know it existed. I think I had heard, like, probably only a few years ago, because it pops up when you read, like, when they do the lists of, like, movies you've never heard of or, like, movies that were too scary for kids or something like that. Like, I've seen it pop up on some lists, but... It was just, I'd never, it's one of those things, like James said, that they kind of just sweep under the rug. Like, I'm sure, when did it get released on DVD? Because I've never seen it in a store, like, just sitting on the shelf. Like, I've never seen it anywhere.
It happens all the time. It's like, A Muppet Family Christmas is my favorite Christmas movie, and I have, like, an illegal DVD because I saw it once. It did come out on DVD one time, and it must have just been out for, like, a month or so. And or maybe just like Walmart, I have no idea. It was like $200 on eBay. I was like, until if it comes out on Blu-ray, I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I'll just hold on to this illegal A Muppet Family Christmas.
That's what I'm hoping when we get the when Disney does their Disney streaming service, because they've said that they're gonna put all of their, at least all of, I'm assuming, the classic movies onto the service. So I hope they're also gonna include lesser seen things like this, or The Rocketeer, or that stuff shows up.
I feel like it should be everything, but who knows? I could also see them doing some kind of like vault-esque thing where things are limited.
Mm-hmm.
Like, today's Dumbo month, you only have a month to see Dumbo before the new one comes out.
That's how DC does their streaming platform, DC Universe. Like, all their original stuff is always on there, but they rotate everything else. So it's like you can watch Tim Burton's Batman movies, but maybe next month those aren't going to be on there. But then the month after that, all the Superman movies will be on there.
That's how that Criterion channel is that I subscribe to. It didn't start up yet. It starts up next week. Yeah, it'll be the
8th.
Yep, the day after, or the weekend after this airs. And it has, like, all movies that'll be there all the time. And then every day there's, like, a new type of theme that the movie, I think, is only there for a week.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems like more and more streaming services are doing that. Because, like, I remember, like, Pet Sematary was on Shudder. And I was like, oh, I'm reading the book, then I'll watch it. And then I just finished the book. I said to my brother, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch it on Shudder. He's like, oh, they took it off. And I'm like, it's been, like, a month. But yeah, and you brought up DC. When I
should have told me.
Hmm?
I bought the 4K, like, Mondo Steelbook.
Oh, okay.
I still have the DVD.
Oh, nice. it's on Prime. Oh, now, okay. So, but yeah, you brought up DC. I subscribed to the app and I was expecting like everything, but I was like, what? They only have like, but now it makes sense if they rotate it.
Yeah, that's their whole, and I guess that's the, in their mind, that keeps people subscribed, because then it's, you can't just plan, like, because I think that's what most people would do, like, Star Trek, or just today was the first episode or the premiere of
first two
Twilight Zone.
I watched them at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Shoot, that's today
was the first. Fuck, I didn't know the premiere of that. And I think with those ones, they know people are only gonna, they're gonna get like a free trial, like binge whatever they wanted to watch and then get rid of it. So I think the thought with the rotating content is, well, keep it. Maybe this month nothing will really interest you, but then next month we're gonna we're gonna put stuff on there that you'll want to look.
I bought Shudder just for Ghostwatch. I had 2 free months of Shudder. Got charged a month. Went to cancel it. They're like, "Don't you want it? We'll give you another month for free." So I said, "Okay." And then we used it for Mandy.
Mm-hmm.
I've not got rid of it. It's been $5. Yeah. So I essentially spent $20 on Mandy and Ghostwatch.
I've done the same thing.
So I need to. I do need to cancel that. But Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Side aside, I think the first episode is free on like YouTube and Amazon Prime to try to get the people in.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But I watched 2 episodes, no spoilers. I thought they were both pretty good. And I still think it's not a spoiler, but the nightmare at 30,000 feet now is not a straight up.
That's remake. What I heard. It's a reimagining. Yeah. That's probably the one I'm most excited for now because that they're reimagining that.
Well, there's a really cool element. They tie in the, it's very popular these days, podcasting.
Hmm.
That gets tied into that episode.
Oh, no. Us podcasters.
Very cool.
Us podcasters causing trouble.
One way or another. I do. You know what? I would like to talk about that eventually.
Is what, podcasting and popular culture?
Just that, yeah. No, the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd be totally for that. I didn't know it premiered. Fuck, I need to. Jordan Peele's having one hell of a month.
It doesn't have to be current. We could do it in the middle of summer. I don't know. Something. But I definitely recommend it from the 2 episodes that I've seen. Or wait until like May 23rd when they're all done and then pay for a month, watch that, watch all the Star Trek Discovery, which has been off and on for me. I think the second season's been better, but $1. I worked on that.
Yeah, I worked on it too.
Really hyping it up.
Well, you know.
It's not going to bring it back for a second season. I was gonna say,
it got canceled. So, but yeah, watch it if you, still watch it, guys, because it was filmed in Pittsburgh here.
But anyways, if they do come out with a Disney Plus, I don't know what date that's supposed to be.
I don't think they have any sort of date yet.
Yeah, I don't think they announced it.
I don't even know how far along they're even add on the production of any of the shows that they've been
like
talking about.
That's like that Apple TV Plus. It's like
announced every person in Hollywood that's working on it, and then but nothing. no date, no actual idea of what the content is,
no pricing or anything.
Yeah, because Jon Favreau is filming that Star Wars show for Disney Plus, but they still haven't announced when it's coming out. And then they have all those Marvel shows too.
Yep.
So,
probably 2020.
Daredevil back, maybe.
Well, I don't know because they've announced new shows like they're more in tune with the movies. But I'd love it if they brought back Daredevil and Punisher and all that. But I know Hulu has expressed interest in bringing those shows back. So who knows?
Well, Disney technically owns Hulu now, anyway.
Oh,
because they bought. Because it was like Disney owned 30%, Fox owned 30%, and I think Comcast owned the other 20%, and then somebody else has like a real small percentage of it.
I will say this in this episode, because I won't be on the Avengers Endgame episode when we do that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of prefer like if the TV shows were kind of doing what the DC is doing, and it's its own thing, because it's just too much to catch
up. It's too much. Yeah, I guess... It sounds like these shows aren't going to be like, it sounds like they're going to be like side stories. They're not going to really affect what's happening in the movie. Like the Loki show sounds like a prequel.
And I hope it's a talk show.
Like a Loki talk show?
The Loki show.
The Loki show. And he like just interviews, I don't know, people that have left the show. Like if Chris Evans gets killed off or leaves, I'm just saying that because that's something that people have been talking about for years. Tom Hiddleston, he has to interview as Loki, the actor.
Yeah, he's in character. I'd watch.
It doesn't even have to be Marvel. It could be literally anything.
What they said the Loki show is going to be, I don't think sounds that interesting, but I would watch the fuck out of that. Tom Hiddleston in character interviewing people as Loki.
So we're talking about Dumbo today. directed by Tim Burton. Yeah. Anyways, Tim Burton, he stole the Jack... pumpkin head design for Jack Skeleton.
Definitely.
And we're back to
this.
Return to Oz.
But yeah, Jack Jack Pumpkinhead, who's brought to life by Ozma, the Queen of Oz, who's imprisoned in a mirror. There's a lot going on in this movie.
He does have a moment, too, that fits into the theme where, like, he is kind of creepy besides his voice. Like, he's, if his voice didn't sound so friendly, he's, like, a terrifying,
towards you.
Yeah. He's, like, kind of like a zombie, like, coming back to life or something.
Weird jittery arms.
Yeah, how did they do him? How did they do the effects on him? Sometimes I thought, like, there was a very skinny, like, person in there. And then other times it was like, there's no way, like, they've had to, like, pull him up with strings or something.
Yeah, it looked like a combination of, like, puppet work and a costume. I feel like some shots had to have been somebody in a costume, while other shots were probably puppet. And I know, like I said, Jim Henson did a lot of the work in this, and Brian Henson voiced Jack Pumpkinhead, so I feel like...
Now, how do you think Brian Henson got involved in this?
In this?
And yeah, in his whole career and stuff.
I'm guessing it has something to do with his dad. I thought you had a point that you're going to try to...
You made the point. That was the point.
Oh, that like Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son.
Yeah. Who's doing puppet stuff still.
Yeah. He did that movie last year that did not get well received.
Like this, I guess.
Yeah, like this. Yeah. I don't know what reviews were like for this, but I know that puppet noir movie that came out last year directed by Brian Henson got pretty torn apart.
The reviews for this had to be terrible. Like, maybe adults were like, I don't know, I thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the horror fan base, like, people... people that like are like, yeah, Jason Voorhees, and then they saw Return to Oz and they're like, that was the sickest movie I've ever seen. But I definitely somebody I imagine somebody bringing their kid to this and the kid's just terrified.
Yeah, probably within like the first 15 minutes at some point.
But that's the movie I'd make. I don't even like kids. I saw when I saw Dumbo, there was this kid like walking away from his parent, and his dad like was too into the movie, and the kid didn't give a shit about Dumbo. And the kid was like hanging over like the balcony, and I had this terrible thought where I'm like, I wish the kid would fall, not like get seriously hurt, but like enough that like they had to leave the movie theater.
I don't, that's why, because I almost did this for my controversial pick, because like so many people recall being scared by this as kids, but I don't know what the audience reaction was, and I, because it flopped, because Disney, they only kept it in theaters for so long, they gave it very, very minimal marketing, so I feel like it didn't make that much of a cultural splash. But I do feel like if the internet was around back then, like the horror community definitely would have embraced this movie. They definitely would be like, oh, this is definitely a horror movie that, you know, Disney made.
I don't even feel like they're making movies for kids that are, well, first of all, there's a lot of movies that don't treat kids, their audience, like adults. They treat them like they're subhuman, which I guess they can be in a degree, but I feel like the movies that talk to kids like people work a lot better.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of, like, I rewatched the Are You Afraid of the Dark on Prime. I don't know if it's on there anymore, but they were fucked up.
Yeah.
They were fucked up shit. And I was like, how did I watch this as a kid? Because, like... They don't have anything like this for kids now.
Yeah, and I brought up on our Shazam episode, like, Shazam is a kid's movie, but it, you know, treats kids like they're human beings, you know, and that's what I love. That's what I like about a lot of kids' movies in the 80s and 90s, because you brought up Are You Afraid of the Dark, or I always bring up the Ninja Turtles movie in the 90s. And that's a family film, but that very much kind of tackles a lot of mature subjects about family and, like, losing a parent. And, like, you know,
kids doing drugs.
Yeah, kids doing drugs. Like,
kids doing drugs and stealing.
Yeah, falling prey to, like, you know, outside influences. And it's a great fucking movie. And like, I feel like every kid should have to watch that movie. And even this, like.
This is still the Turtles you're talking about?
Yeah, the Turtles movie.
I would join the Foot Clan. They seem cool.
They let you steal cool shit.
Yeah. They're like ninjas. They had
arcade cabinets.
But even this, the subject matter, in a way, is kind of, because, you know, it's Dorothy returns to Oz, which is like this great wonderland when she went last, but now it's, you know, obviously a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and like Oz, even though in the last movie they played off like Oz was a dream, this one definitely plays it off like Oz is a real place, but still very much, Oz still very much is a reflection in this film of Dorothy's subconscious. and it's, you know, not the happy, bright place that it was last time. Oz is, you know, a wasteland because Dorothy herself is, you know, not in a good place mentally.
I do also think that Oz has to be a real place because we've known two Dorothys,
mm-hmm.
and Oz himself have all managed to get there.
Yeah, they have. But yeah, I guess, because yeah, you know, in the original one, they added that, like, oh, was it all a dream, because they didn't think audiences would buy it. But this one, especially at the end, this one definitely takes a position of like, no, it wasn't a dream. Oz is very much a real place. But yeah, like, I do feel like this is a film. I don't know what it's trying to say, but I feel like they're trying to say something about her mental health. But also there's a weird theme of like life and death that's going through this movie that I don't think comes together quite at the end. But yeah, like, I feel like this was trying to be a more mature film than the original one and didn't quite make it.
Yeah, I don't know what the theme is, because in the first movie, it's about how poor they are and they can't afford anything. And that's kind of like how they get bossed around by their neighbor. That's the Wicked Witch when she's the witch or whatever. And then in this, like, I don't know if they had some sort of insurance claim where they got a lot of money and they could afford that kind of help.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't seem like it's Kansas. Like, what the hell's around? Like, where the hell is there this electroshock therapy, like, psych ward?
I didn't even think the original Wizard of Oz was like that far into the past. Like, when they get in the cart, I was like, oh, what time period is this supposed to be? And then they go past a covered wagon, and I was like, oh, I'm very confused on what time period. And the guy pulls out the electroshock machine, and I'm like, and he's got lamps, and I'm like,
they did say,
I'm like, I'm very confused on.
They say it's how like is it 2 years before the 20th century, so it'd be like 1899, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, this is weird. And then I was trying to think back to the original, and I don't know, I guess that's probably around the time the original was supposed to be.
I feel like the original had cars or something, but I'm pretty sure that if they're basing it off the books that were all like early like 1900s they were written, yeah, they probably did take place then.
Probably. Yeah. But yeah, like, because on first glance, this movie does seem to have a theme about mental health. But then, like, when they get to Oz, there is this really weird obsession with life and death, with like the powder of life and, you know, giving Jack life, giving Gump life.
How about objectifying, you know, people?
Maybe.
Like, that literally turning people into objects.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That might be it. Yeah, that's another theme. Yeah, because, yeah, the Gnome King at the end is what he does with people. He literally turns them into objects.
I do like, too, when Dorothy's, like, in the ocean and then turns into the desert. And she's like, this is the deadly desert. It's a deadly desert. She explains, you got to play lava. You cannot step onto the sand or you'll instantly die. And I think it's funny because it's like it's her memory of Oz, but I don't think that's ever mentioned in the original Oz.
It's not, no.
It's definitely just in the books.
You know, the Good Witch is singing, and she's like, by the way, don't go to the deadly desert. You'll die.
I do feel like, you know, that would be a bit of information that has to be shared. It's like, oh, yeah, you don't go in this desert because as soon as you touch the ground, you become sand. As does Wheelers found out.
The Wheelers was kind of cool. It reminded me of, there's a scene in Game of Thrones where they, like, the dragons burn people when they turn to ash.
Mm-hmm.
And the bot, like, it still holds that shape.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of cool that the Wheelers did hold their shape a little bit to, like, fall into the sand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good moment, too, because Gump's flying. They're being chased. It's really weird because Gump's, like, could fly where the road doesn't go. And they're, like, they're catching up to his Gump. And it's not his plan to fly over that desert where they can't get through. It just sort of happens. I think it would have been cool if it was Gump's plan.
Like, Gump's just like, fuck it. They're going to die in the deadly desert. Well, I guess they had to fly over to get to the Gnome King's Mountain because that's where they're headed.
It also, like, I don't know if it's just because I'm obsessed with Zelda,
mm-hmm.
but how, like, it was, like, straight up desert, really close to, like, that woods area. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of something of, like a video game. Yeah.
This is the snow world. This is the desert world.
They did have all those worlds in this. This is the kingdom that's been destroyed by monsters.
Yeah, it does kind of, yeah, I didn't think about it. It does feel like a video game where, like, the desert just stops and then there's woods.
Even the snow's like off-putting because don't they just like land and there's just snow?
Yeah,
yeah. When they land on this,
fall out of the sky.
I do like when the Gnome King become like he comes up, so he's the whole face of the side of the mountain, which reminded me of the Mighty Max toy set.
Oh yeah.
But I like how he like okay, the rocks I could understand maybe missing those faces, but the whole thing shifts and none of these people realize that it's like a massive face.
Like, yeah, yeah, because he starts talking to them and they're like, "Where's that voice coming from?" There's literally like a face on the side of the mountain talking to them. But yeah.
Yeah, they're not looking like at it. It looks like they don't know where to look, like it's a heavenly voice. You know, Ventura. Yes, Satan. Like he's just looking around. Yeah, I don't know. What happened to the Wizard of Oz?
That's never, that's never explained in this movie. Yeah.
The Scarecrow's just the in Scarecrow's charge. Just
the king of.
Oh, wait, at the end, at the end of the last movie, he left in the balloon. Because he's like, oh, yeah, I don't know how it works.
Yeah, that's right. He flies away in the balloon, and she falls out, and that's when she has to has to make the wish with the ruby slippers. That's
but,
right.
But I don't know if the last movie said, but I know in the book, Scarecrow somehow became, like, King of Oz. But
he has a brain now, so he's probably, like, he's the smartest person.
Yeah. But Ozma, in this, she's in this, you know, she's revealed to be the true Princess of Oz. And that's the same in the book. I know that much. He's like.
It would have been better if it was Dorothy.
Yeah.
It'd have been a very like Pan's Labyrinth thing. Like you should stay.
Well, I thought where that. You belong. I thought that too. Because at the end, you know, she's like, "Oh, you should stay here." And I'm thinking, if I was Dorothy, I totally would. Because Kansas sucks, and they tried to electrocute her.
Kansas in 1899 sounds awful.
Or it ends like Neverending Story, where she comes back riding the Cowardly Lion and just like terrorizing people.
But yeah, she chooses to go. Thankfully, she leaves the chicken who should be a war hero now because the chicken saved the land of Oz. But yeah, she leaves the chicken in Oz with Ozma and all of them. But yeah, like if I was Dorothy, I'm like, I'm just going to stay.
And the rock monsters mentioned the chicken, but like the Wheelers clearly work for the Gnome King and they're never like, holy shit, she has a chicken. We got to get rid of that.
Oh, no, they mentioned that.
When, oh, they do say they got to get rid of
that. When she's locked in that room, they're like, "You got a chicken in there with you." So, you know, there is some chicken hate going on in Oz.
I think all stories need to have that.
Like a weird chicken or like
it'll all come together at the end. But for some reason, just like an hour and a half into the 2-hour movie, you're like, why did he eat this chicken? I have no idea what's going on. So what do you think is the scariest thing of this movie? Like what stayed with you the longest?
You know what? Like I said, as a kid, it was the headless witch. I guess for me, what stayed with me so much is like, you know, this imagery of Oz, this you know wonderful fantasy land being destroyed, and you know, like as I grew up, I came up with an idea of like you know a character who had like a fantasy world of their own that they'd visit as a kid, but as they got older, somehow they went back to that fantasy world and it was destroyed. And it was, you know, obviously it'd be a metaphor for like growing up and kind of like how life comes in and fucks you up. And, but,
this movie has been brought, this podcast has been brought to you by Christopher Robin.
But this movie is essentially that. This movie is essentially like, you know, go, your imagination kind of like getting destroyed by like, you know, circumstances outside of your realm and you have to go back and kind of rebuild that. But yeah, like for some reason that really stuck with me is like, you know, you know, Oz is obviously Dorothy's way of escaping real life, but even Oz has been affected by real life. And that, you know, like I said, I feel like they tried to do something with that subtext in this movie, but they didn't quite think it through. But yeah, like my idea I had for it was, I realized when we watched this was essentially Return to Oz. So I'm like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, continue with that, that script idea, but that's why I think I like it is because like it has all this dark imagery associated with, you know, the bright and, you know, sunshiny land of Oz.
Yeah. I think the creepiest thing for me was probably just everybody turned to stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time you were at this place, it was like lively and there were so many people around. And the fact that like, they don't mention that they can come back from being turned into stone. Like they might as well just have all be dead and their remnants are just like throughout the whole city.
Yeah, they really take it for granted that if they destroy the Gnome King, these people would come back, which they did. But like, you know, that wasn't a given. That if they killed him, if he would, his spell would be undone.
It's like the Empire, since it's the second one, it's like the Empire Strikes Back. It has this like really, really, really dark ending.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, at the end of the day, they save Oz in the Emerald City.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. But yeah, what about...
Chuck, what's the scariest thing you saw in this movie as an adult because you didn't see it before?
I still think the creepiest thing was the Gump. Just grabbing a bunch of furniture and putting something's head on it. Basically making your own Frankenstein's monster. What are we doing? Because I think that's one of my favorite... that's also one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Is she just looks at the head, which the head's weird to begin with because you know it's just something weird. And she goes, I have a plan. And then nothing happens for like 10 minutes. They go and rescue TikTok. And she says, Jack will tell you the plan. And then she's going to get the powder of awakening or the powder of life, which I thought she was just going to take that and sprinkle it on like the cowardly lion and the Tin Man or something. They go upstairs and they're just, Jack and TikTok are just pushing random furniture together. And he just leaves and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? I'm so confused. then it like zooms out and you see the whole scene and you just see this head strapped to a bunch of furniture with leaves attached to it. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? I'm so confused. That's a weird concept of...
It'd be kind of cool if they brought him to life by accident and like had to make him a body. Because they just felt bad that he was a head on the wall.
Yeah. They had to give him something.
The powder, they took the powder, spilt it. The head becomes alive. He's like questioning why he's in existence, and they're like, "We'll fix you.
We'll give you a new body.
Strap him to a couch
of wings."
Then they pour the powder on him, and he just starts screaming like, "Ah!"
He's like, "I thought I was dead." The last thing you remember was
pain. I've been in darkness for years.
Yeah, that's a good kids movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Return to Oz. Did not terrify many audiences in the 80s, but I feel like it should now. Like I do kind of want this film to get rediscovered and get like a cult following because I think it does need it. But like I said, Disney's really good at burying stuff it doesn't like to talk about. And this is definitely one of them.
They need to do Song of the South again.
I think that's one that could maybe stay buried.
Were you okay with the removal of the racist caricatures in Dumbo?
Yeah, they really removed the racism from Dumbo, so I feel like...
The most disappointing part of the movie where he was like, damn, I was hoping those black jive-talking crows were going to be here.
No, but I was talking up Dumbo, and I had somebody being like, it's these people's favorite movie, and they were all unhappy about it. I don't know what angry...
I don't know whose angry, favorite movie is Dumbo.
Angry Joe or something, and I'm like, I feel like everything in that movie was an improvement. I'm not saying you'll love the movie, but yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, they had all those like racist crows. Jim Crow was like the name of one of the crows.
Yeah, like literally. It's like it couldn't have been any more obvious.
They're all like clearly doing like poorly educated black impersonations. Yes. But this is somebody's favorite movie, and they don't like the Tim Burton version.
Speaking of black cinema, if you do have Shudder, there's a great documentary on it called Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror. And it is amazing and insightful, and I watched it last night. So
it's in my queue, you know?
Yeah. That made me think of it, because like, they do tackle a lot of that like depiction of black people in cinema, you know, throughout the ages. And, but yeah, it is great, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah. And we're Cinema de More. Oh, we're doing a contest where you can win Aquaman or Into the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse digital codes. Mm-hmm. The way that you play this contest or compete in this contest is you have to write us a review on either iTunes or Google Play. Whatever lets you review our podcast, review it, take a snapshot, and tag us on either of our Facebook pages or our Twitter pages. And on the 23rd, we'll end that contest. We'll pick some winners. Just let us know which movie you'd prefer. And so the instructions are on our Facebook page and our Twitter page. They're both Cinema de More, at Cinema de More. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
I'm at James Reinhardt.
ChuckFitton66.
iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Please rate, review us, subscribe.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
And, yeah, thank you guys for listening. This was the beginning of Childhood Paranoia.
Thank you.
Yeah.